Our platforms are available in person and live streamed on YouTube, Sundays at 11 a.m. Central Time. To participate in our platforms, please join us in person or go to our website, ethicalstl.org, to the news tab for a link to our live stream. This podcast is brought to you by the Ethical Society of St. Louis, Being Human Together. The following recording is of a platform address presented to the Ethical Society of St. Louis by Dr. Nancy Merle Howell, entitled The Full Story, Age as an Asset and Deficit. It was recorded live on 8 June 2025.
Our platform address today features Dr. Nancy Merle Howell, the Betty Bofinger Brown Distinguished Professor at Washington University in St. Louis. Nancy also directs the Harvey A. Friedman Center for Aging that promotes research, education, and community engagement on aging-related issues across all academic disciplines at WashU. Her scholarship focuses on productive engagement in later life. Today, she will share the full story of aging. Please help me extend a warm welcome to Dr. Nancy Merle Howell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's good to recognize some folks in the audience that have been so good to me and WashU and our aging work over the years. Thanks for this opportunity. I have been involved with a national effort called Reframing Aging. It's organized by the Gerontological Society of America. I participate in a monthly learning collaborative on this concept of reframing aging, and I'm on the National Advisory Committee for that organization. I have learned a lot, and my perspectives on aging are different because of this exposure. I've reframed my own thinking, my own teaching, and my own writing. I've taught gerontology, or aging, at WashU for 30 years, and I teach the fundamentals of older adults and aging society, basic social gerontology 101 type stuff. But due to my reframing aging exposure and my own aging, I've begun to see things differently, and I highlight content differently, I teach differently. So I'm going to review some of my new insights with you today. My goal is to share a new angle, a new frame, that I can provide on the familiar topics of older adults and aging society. So why do we need to reframe? There's a current narrative about out there, or across countries really, especially in America, that old age means certain things. This is the current narrative. I call it age is deficit. Age is deficit. Age is decline. Age is something to be avoided, in fact, to be battled at all costs. These images underlie the pervasive ageism in this society and the messages that we tell ourselves about growing old. So to me, reframing aging is about looking at things differently and telling a complete and accurate story about old age. It's to confront the current narrative as age as decline and deficit and tell the full story of aging, which includes both assets and deficits. So this morning, I am going to take a new lens on five fundamentals of gerontology, the fundamentals of gerontology 101, and we're going to look at each one through a different lens that might influence our perspectives about later life. So same reality, different lens. Our first, aging 101, the concept of age is socially constructed. People ask me all the time, when does old start? What do you mean old? What is old? And as you know, there is no one answer. At what age does a person become old? That was a question asked across country to thousands of people of all ages, and these were the answers. You can see that it varies a lot by country. Even the culture we grow up in has an idea of when old starts. And we think about it differently for males and females. So the point of this is there's no one age when people become old. We have created it. So, how old is old? We know that there's social, biological, psychological changes in our bodies and with time. And that chronological age is a really poor indicator of those things. But we tie to it so strongly as the indicator of who people are. So I ask, where do we get 65 anyway? This magic line. Well, you say Social Security. Well, where did we get it originally? And where we got it originally was in the late 1890s. Otto von Bismarck was a chancellor in pre-World War I Germany who enacted the first public income support policy, so the first Social Security policy. He picked the eligibility age of 65 because not many people lived that long. At that time in Germany and in Europe, 4% of the population lived to be over 65. So it was a massively popular public enactment and one that wasn't very expensive. So in that wisdom, we inherited that number when we initiated ours in 1935, and 65 remains this magic line. We've changed retirement age to 67, as most of us know, but 65 is still what we hang on to. So mostly people will talk about older adults, 65 and older. But the point is, we have constructed it. And biological age is one of the fewest things about it that has been constructed. It's a socially and psychologically constructed construct. So here's the new frame for me. We have invented what it means to be old. We can reinvent it. And we must, given the new longevity. There's never been such a demand to reinvent as now, given that we live into our 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond. Gerontology 101, the heterogeneity of the older population. When I teach, I lead with this period, key message number one. Older adults are not a monolithic group. There is no the elderly. And I go berserk when people talk about the elderly. Till my mom died in her late 80s, we were often in the same demographic tables on charts. So just think about people over the age of 65. There's 40 years of life there. Some people are very healthy, some are very ill, some are very rich, some very poor, some very optimistic, and some very demoralized. And it's a great heterogeneous group of people. So just think of the variation, if we're going to go by numbers, between a 65-year-old and a 75-year-old and a 100-year-old. Vast differences. But also think about the difference between one 80-year-old and the next 80-year-old. Vast differences. But we present these numbers as a group all the time. And I'm as guilty as the next person because it's really hard to talk about all the different variety. We want to give stats on people over the age of 65. So we gloss over this great variability. So we say, oh, people over the age of 65, 10% have a dementia that affects functioning. Well, that's 3% of people between 65 and 74, 17% between 75 and 84, and a third of the people over 85. So we average that all together to get 10% of people over the age of 65, and then we apply that generalization to any older person. So it's very dangerous how we use our numbers. But the other thing we do is we present those numbers as the glass half full. For example, we see this chart all the time, teaching health and aging. And our narrative is most people over the age of 65 have at least one chronic condition. Many have multiple. And here's the most common. And then we talk about those conditions. Well, if we flip the numbers, if we flip the numbers, it's a real different story. But we don't lead with those numbers ever. But look at those numbers and the story that they tell. I flipped the numbers for the now unfortunately defunct Administration on Community Living, who puts out every year numbers about older adults in this society. So I flipped the numbers, and tell a different but true story that 81% of the U.S. population over the age of 65 does not report any significant disability. And alongside any chart that shows the upward growth of dementia with age, I emphasize that most people, in fact, get off this planet without experiencing dementia. So it's a different story. It's an accurate story. It's just more a complete story. Disability exists. Deficits exist. But there's a lot of capacity, and we don't address or respond to or put forward that capacity. So how am I doing on time? Okay, aging 101.3. We are living long. We know that one of the greatest achievements in human history is the extension of life expectancy. So at the turn of the last century, in 1904, life expectancy was 46. So now we've been hit by COVID. It's down a little bit, but 78.4 is expected life expectancy. So we've doubled that in the last century and then some. Here's the upward growth, up. And that is such an accomplishment, such a success story. But we approach it in our narrative as gloom and doom and budget crisis and dependency. We approach it as if it's something we have to be guarded against. But there is a big but in this, and this is that but. It's so unequally distributed across gender, across ethnicity in this country, and across the globe. We're not going to get into the details of this, obviously, but the graph is to say this gift has not been distributed equally, and that's one of our biggest challenges, resulting from inequalities across the whole life course. So here's the frame. We have doubled life expectancy, yet we bemoan it. We bemoan it as the silver tsunami, as the demographic time bomb. We need to lead with, wow, what an accomplishment, what a gift, what a miracle that we have in front of us. But we need to reduce the disparity in that gift. Ageism is a real big part of the Reframing Aging Initiative. We are taught to think about ageism, teach about ageism, try to help identify ageism. So I want to talk about this as something that we need to reframe. Here's a definition. You all know about it. Age, and it could be towards younger people too. I just happen to focus on older people in my work. It's how it's stereotypes, it's prejudice, it's discrimination based on age. Develops early on, from the time we're born till the time we die, we hear that old is bad, that it's dependent, that it's decrepit, all of those things. From books, media, people around us. The interesting thing that we tell our students, 18-year-old students, it's discrimination against your future self. So you should begin to start thinking about it now, because you will experience it if you live long. That's the irony. Unlike some of the other isms, we might escape them in our lives. But if we have the privilege of age, we'll experience ageism. So ageism will catch up with you. A lot of research going on in ageism. It's common. People report it. So University of Michigan has a poll on aging every year. And a lot of people, 82% of older people, identify how they experience it. Exposure to ageist messages, seeing, hearing, reading jokes about old age and aging. Seeing, hearing, reading things suggesting that older people are unattractive or undesirable. Internalized ageism, down at the bottom there. 36% of older adults endorse statements that old age brings depression, old age brings isolation, old age brings anxiety, that it's a normal part of aging. And we believe it so much that we will say yes when we're asked that question. That's internalized ageism. And finally, interpersonal ageism, people in interactions, people treating you different because of age, assuming that you can't hear or assuming that you don't have exposure to cell phones and computers. So, it's a moral issue, like we need social justice across all kind of identities, but it also, like all the other isms, we can document its hurtfulness to us. So there's research that shows all of these things are associated with ageism. It affects our health. There are health consequences when service providers are biased against older people. You've probably experienced that. And there's health consequences when we ourselves internalize those messages and say, well, maybe it's just old age, or we don't aggressively approach something that we might want to. So, and besides health, there's economic impacts of it, there's conflicts that come up because of it, and we really think it inhibits people's interest going into working in geriatrics, in any kind of field that specializes in older adults. So the frame, just we need to become aware. It's pervasive, it's harmful, we can identify it, we can confront it, we can change things. The last frame is, the death rate is still 100%. I get accused very often of being too optimistic about aging and old age, accused of denying the reality of the really hard parts that most of us have faced and will face. And I've moderated my thinking and teaching around it because of that. However, I still think we have some reframe to do here. I use in people that have been in some of our events at WashU and classes have seen this. It's such a handy little graphic to teach students about the aging process. That yellow loop, that is primary aging. That is biological aging. All organisms do it. It's at the cellular level. It's a process of decline. It happens, period. There's loss of efficiency at the cellular level, at the organ level. But in and of itself, not a disease. For example, well, it makes the organism compromised, though, and more vulnerable to disease. So there's the rub. It's not a disease in and of itself. So, for example, our immune system is weaker, is less efficient in later life. Not a problem in and of itself until we get an infection. Not a problem in and of itself until cancer cells begin to grow. So it makes us vulnerable to the green and orange loop. And that's where we have all of our focus. We say we're trying to compress morbidity. We're trying to get that period shorter by our understanding of disease and medication. But to date, there's the yellow line and the blue hoop, and they're not going away. So the reality is, oh, and by the way, going from the yellow to the blue is how people estimate lifespan in many species. If we could just live without disease, human species could make it 120 years. But anyway, our focus is on compressing morbidity. But to date, most of us will experience chronic conditions, disability, and dependence, and all of us will die. There are limits to human functioning. There are natural limits to our abilities. If we live long enough, many of us will lose the ability to work, the ability to drive, the ability to manage our own affairs. And I've gained some clarity that a significant challenge for us is to recognize there are real limits and there are artificial limits. Removing barriers, creating opportunities, increasing access, eliminating ageism, creating age-inclusive environments. This is what all my colleagues across the globe are working on. These are words about eliminating artificial limits. But real limits and in human functioning exist. But one of the problems I've discovered is that it's hard to know what's artificial and what's real. So, should I retire because it's expected of me? Artificial. Or should I retire because I don't have the same stamina and cognitive speed that I used to? Real. Or a bad sidewalk and steep inclines? Artificial. Arthritis and stamina? Real. But we can't tell which one is which. And in fact, I think as a society, we've exaggerated the real limits because it's fastest. It's most convenient. You can't do this because you're old. Or what do you expect because you're old? That's more expedient than you can't do this because we don't have the time or the resources or the structure or the knowledge to facilitate that. So when we operate from an ageist deficit perspective, artificial limits look like real limits. And we accept the artificial limits and fail to achieve the promise of the extended years of life. And I think if we could get rid of all the artificial limits, that we could handle the real limits better, with more dignity, with more support for each other. So here's the frame on this. Most of us will experience the hard part of getting old. Death is universal. There are those real limits, but there's so many artificial limits to our late life at the moment, and ageism is one of them. So we need to remove the artificial limits so we can deal with the real limits better. So these are the 5 points that I have reframed in my thinking and my teaching. I hope they've given you some food for thought about how we can tell the same story but tell it differently and hopefully create a new reality for all of us as we grow old. And I close with an appeal to counter ageism as one of the biggest artificial limits that we have in how we structure our policies and our programs and our interactions with older people. So join me in thinking about raising awareness and confronting ageism. And I appreciate your interest. And if you'd like more information, be sure glad to share it with you. And this is where I'm from, at the Center for Aging, and we'd be glad to share information with you. So thank you for your time.
You have been listening to a platform address presented to the Ethical Society of St. Louis by Dr. Nancy Morrow Howell on 8 June 2025. To hear other platform addresses, to learn more about our society, the ethical culture movement, or to donate to support our society, please visit our website at ethicalstl.org. Until next time, thank you for listening. Don't miss new presentations. Subscribe in your podcatcher. You can find us on a variety of services, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and YouTube Music. Also, if you enjoy these programs, please rate them to let the world know.